Welcome to Nutmeg Chatter. I'm J. Timothy Quirk. Jeff Testanero is a writer who specializes in discussing graphic novels, comic books, and movie content with an emphasis on the DC Universe. His work is found on the website thelastfanboy.com and dccomicsnews.com. We'll discuss his work, his influences, and the plethora of content being created for the DC brand, including movies and an entire DC Universe streaming service. We'll talk about this and so much more here on Nutmeg Chatter. Welcome to Nutmeg Chatter, Jeff Testanero.
Hi.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. We are friends on Facebook. It's been a while since we spoke face-to-face, but I remember one of the last times that I did, I remember creating some artwork for you of a very special nature.
It hangs in my house where I do my writing. I have a little studio office down my first level, and it's right above my desk.
That's amazing.
I kid you not. I'll
that
send
makes
you a picture.
Me, that makes me so happy to hear that. I depicted Jeff and his lovely wife as superheroes, which worked so perfectly at not just at the time, but especially now. I mean, the superhero genre is something that you've always loved. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I've been a big fan of it ever since I was about maybe five, when my mom showed me the first Richard Donner Superman 2, actually.
Ah, yes.
Was the first actual superhero movie I ever saw, with Superman, Christopher Reeves fighting General Zod, and kneel before Zod. And I just was just so, I always loved Superman, and Zod was just so cool. And it was just, it's been 32 years now.
And do you think that seminal moment of seeing on the big screen Superman 2, which was a fantastic movie.
Amazing movie.
That kind of changed the course of your interest, the course of your life. If that movie had been Superman 3 or 4, do you think it would have had the same effect?
Yes. I mean, I was a small child. Superman 3, maybe not, because, I mean, kind of as a fickle fanboy, especially of Superman, because I love Superman.
Sure.
3 was kind of Richard Pryor and some weird robot thing walking around.
Right.
But Superman, probably not. I mean, Superman is Superman to me, especially at that age. Probably not. I probably wouldn't be as into it as I am now, but I still think I'd be into it.
In terms of movies, the Superman 1 and 2 were, I would say, close to perfect. The first one was certainly the origin story, and they did it. This is, of course, before now there are superhero movies almost, three per studio each year. But back then, that was it. And they really created that entire universe.
They didn't saturate the market. And we can get into that later. I feel that there's kind of too much of there's an oversaturation right now, especially coming out of Marvel. And now DC's trying to keep up, putting out 3 next year on top of Marvel's 4. So that's 7 in a year. But like you said, Tim, it was, you know, you had Superman, and then you had to wait 3 years for another Superman, and there was no Batman films yet. I mean, there was the Adam West in the 60s,
right,
with Burt Ward as Robin there, but then the real first Batman movie didn't come out until 1990. So we're talking, you know, 5 to 7 years later, we got a different superhero. And I totally agree. If it made it special.
Yes, it did. And, you know, in terms of Batman as well, the Tim Burton Batman, which came out well before the, the Dark Knight type series of Christopher Nolan, which I was a fan. I'm actually a fan of both incarnations. I really enjoyed, especially at the time, because there was nothing else to compare it to, too.
Absolutely.
The Batman with Tim Burton, the Batman and Batman Returns, I think were fantastic. And then again, they start to kind of taper off in the 3 and 4 in that particular series. And then I thought that Christopher Nolan's series, they really, you know, they did a really nice job of bookending the whole thing.
Absolutely. I mean, 1989, Batman hit the theater. I remember I saw that movie. I was 8 when it came out. I saw it in the theater maybe 3 or 4 times. And then, of course, I made my mom go buy me the VHS when it came out. When we went up the Age of Video right here in Torrington and bought the VHS when it came in. I had that movie memorized. I was 10 years old, and I could sit there and watch the movie and recite it verbatim. And you had Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson as the Joker. I still think he's the best, personally.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
You had Kim Basinger in there. You just had Jack Palance was in there in the beginning as the mob boss. And, I mean, you get Jack Palance in a movie, it's a hit. Then Batman Returns is my favorite of those, the Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher movies. It was darker. It was a little more serious. We had a lot more action between the Penguin and the Catwoman and Batman. But for me, my favorite Batman movie has to be Batman Begins inside the Christopher Nolan trilogy. I feel like, well, all three, but mainly Batman Begins really dove into Bruce Wayne as a person, why he did what he did after his parents were murdered in the alleyway, Crime Alley, and why he is how he is, how he holds down his anger and his rage and his sadness and his, well, PTSD, really, from watching his parents being murdered right in front of his face at eight years old, I believe. He went off to the mountains of the Himalayas and was stealing. He was thrown in prison. And, you know, when Liam Neeson finds you in prison, you kind of have to go with the guy, right?
I mean, absolutely, yes.
It's Liam Neeson, for God's sakes. He was Hannibal in the A-Team.
I will find you.
Yes. I am Ra's al Ghul, kind of. And I just, you can see it. You can see it on Christian Bale's face, just the pure pain. You can see the small child in his eyes. And it's like, wow, he's not just, I mean, Michael Keaton, he was kind of the stoic Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
But you had him mostly in the rubber bat suit, which is what the 90s fans wanted to see. Christopher Nolan, I believe, really got deep into the character and said, every now and then he'll make a face, Christian Bale will, in Batman Begins, when he sees Katie Holmes, who was his childhood friend who grew up in Wayne Manor with him.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he looks at Alfred, you want to cry for him because you can see he wants to cry.
Right.
He just wants a hug, man. That's all he really wants.
That type of analysis is the type of analysis, especially when you're describing the written genre, many different comic books that come out. There were some great articles that I read, especially like the Green Lantern. You were writing recently about the Green Lantern. Tell me about how you transitioned from fan to writer about this type of genre. How did that transition occur?
I mean, like I said, I've always loved the genre. I've always loved writing. We've known each other for a long time. You know, I like broadcasting and writing. And one day I'm just sitting there. I'm like, you know, I want to write a blog. It's not going to take up too much of my time with the family. And I looked at my wife and I said, what if I blog about superheroes? And not just, hey, this character is really cool. Hey, this edition of Green Lantern number 45 is really cool. Hey, look at this cover art. But really dive into the deeper meaning of the character or the story or what's going on inside Warner Brothers and DC Films and really kind of dig in and then kind of give it my own twist and opinion. So I was just like, you know what? I've been analyzing these characters forever. I might as well share it with the world.
Right. Absolutely. And because you were able to do that, you were put, you know, on the radar of DC Comics news.
Yes.
And as a result, you now write on that site as well.
I do. I saw an article, well, it's not an article, but most a posting from the editor, Josh, at DC Comics News, saying, hey, we need writers. News writers preferred, but, you know, if you want to apply, please apply. And I'm like, well, I don't really know the news format too well right now, but I'm a pretty damn good writer. So I sent an article and I wrote this long piece about the 80th anniversary of Superman. And just getting into the origins and where he's been and just the character in general. And it was, I'm telling you, this post, Tim, it was long. But it really got into the character and why I love Superman and why I think other people love Superman. And I sent it to him. I said, here's my sample piece. Tell me what you think. You know, here's my application. I'd love to, you know, come in and help you guys out. I think within a half an hour, I got a message. We would like to bring you on board to DC Comics News.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I was excited, man. I was doing backflips in my living room. I'm like, and I looked at the readership of the site. It's huge. It's huge. A lot of people, especially, you know, you got to be a DC fan to go on there. But
sure,
a lot of the positive fans were reading it and going, hey, that's a pretty cool news article. And I was like, I really want to be a part of this. So when I got to be a part of it, I was excited.
And you know what? We already are at our first break.
Oh,
when
cool.
we come back, I'm going to talk about DC as opposed to Marvel, and it's not to do any hating on one side or the other, but just to kind of talk about some of the differences.
Okay.
Kind of take that analysis that you have, that ability to, you know, kind of discern the information and kind of analyze some of the differences mm-hmm. and why it is. I'm more interested to find out why you gravitate towards DC at this stage, and we'll talk about the movies as well.
Cool.
So we'll be back in just a few moments with Jeff Testanero here on Nutmeg Chatter. Welcome back to Nutmeg Chatter. I'm J. Timothy Quirk. Here in studio is Jeff Testanero. He is a writer about all things comics, DC, graphic novels. He emphasizes DC because he also writes for DC Comics News. But his own personal site is thelastfanboy.com, which is an absolutely phenomenal name.
Thank you.
For your website there. Fantastic. You know, as we were heading out to the break, you had just talked a little bit about, you know, the love of Superman and why you think other people love Superman, how you got into DC Comics news. Let's talk a little bit about the differences analytically between Marvel versus DC and what gravitates you towards DC versus Marvel. Was it specifically because you gravitated towards Superman and the movie?
I believe, well, Superman had a lot to do with it. You know, I started collecting comics about 8 years old, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm still buying them. I just spent $50 at the comic book store yesterday.
Sure.
$50. Yes, I did that. I like the stories in DC better. I like Marvel. Don't get me wrong. Marvel does a great job. I really like the X-Men, the mutants, mm-hmm. Wolverine, named my youngest son Logan after Wolverine. My wow. oldest son is Cal after Superman, by the mm-hmm. way. But just there's something about the stories inside DC, especially the comic book story. Marvel has a tendency to just to change or retcon its stories midstream. You could be reading, say, Captain America number 10, and then all of a sudden Captain America number 12, you know, this person who was dead 2 issues ago is alive and well, and everything's walking around. And I mean, it's not that dramatic, but you know what I'm saying. They like sure. to change their stories midstream. DC doesn't do that. They will change their stories. The rule in comic books is nobody actually stays dead.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Wayne, Martha Wayne, and Peter Parker's Uncle Ben. Those are like really the only three. I just like DC because it stays with the story. It draws you in. It gives you different parallels. They'll throw different characters in there. You know, Batman can be fighting the Joker. All of a sudden, Lex Luthor shows up in Gotham and helps the Joker escape. Now, Batman's got to suck it up and call Superman for help. But the story stays the same. Marvel kind of, mm-hmm. it's kind of just out in left field. And I feel like they, comic book-wise, they like to just throw things against the wall and see what sticks. Whereas DC has a focus because DC's been doing it for comic book-wise forever.
There used to be two other names added to that list of people who remained, who are dead and remain dead. Gwen Stacy, that yep. used to be sacrosanct,
yep.
Used to leave that, as well as Jason Todd, that used to be sacrosanct. Used to say, okay, we're not going to touch that character because it was a very, in both cases, very powerful stories that
yep.
by themselves redefine the character in a new way because they have to face
yep.
The horror of death, and then to have it changed really changes the impact of those stories.
Well, Gwen Stacy and Jason Todd are both alive and well now. Jason Todd's walking around as the Red Hood, and Gwen Stacy apparently has spider powers. They used to call it Bucky Dead, as mm-hmm. if referring to Bucky Barnes in Captain America. Bucky was dead for 50 years, but it's Bucky dead. And Bucky's alive now, so we can't really call it that. But yeah.
And so that's kind of what why you it's the storytelling themselves.
Yes.
That now when you were younger and you were purchasing your comics, was it at a local comic store? Was it at a local like a grocery store, or did you go to flea markets and rifle through you know bins of comics? How did you purchase your
as I got more into the comic books, I would go to the tag sales. I'd be that kid. But there was a comic book store here in town. Excuse me. Hobby Town now on the North End. That used to be a comic book store, and I'd go in, and that's where I used to buy them. I still go to my local shop in Newington because I believe in the local shop.
Yeah,
I mean,
Torrington still has a comic book store now. It's called My Mother Threw Mine
Away. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, been down there a few times when I was living in town as a kid. But yeah, I believe in the local comic book shop. You can they have all this digital service now. You can read your comic books on your TV. What's
I
the
wanted
point
to ask
that?
You about that. Yeah,
not a fan. Not a fan. Stan Lee said it. And Stan Lee is Stan Lee. There's two things that are amazing in this world: the touch of a woman and the touch of a fresh comic book from the store. There's nothing beats it. He's right. You go into your local shop, you got your local comic book guy behind the counter. I have what's called a pick list. I just gave these are the titles I want every other week, and he holds them aside for me. So I go in there and I pay for mine, and then I'll browse around. You know, my oldest son likes to get Donald Duck comic books now, which is great.
Sure.
But there's nothing better than the local shop. So, you know, you can read your comic book on your TV. But it's not a comic book. You're reading a comic on your television. You know, if the comic book itself, the physical comic book, goes away, it'll be a really sad day.
You know, we talked about DC, we talked about Marvel. Any thoughts about Image and what Todd McFarlane had created with that type of line of trying to having owner-created content?
Image is great. You know, the Spawn issues are great. They're actually rebooting Spawn in movie form. So that's a real testament to him and Image Comics. Vertigo used to do that a lot. Now Vertigo is a subdivision of DC Comics. But they'll still, I looked into it, they'll still accept unsolicited materials from writers who aren't on their staff. Whereas Marvel and DC do not. Vertigo does it. Image does it. Like you said, Todd McFarlane wants the comic book writers to own their comic book. And I think that's really important because then you get more creative titles. You get more creative characters. You get more creative storylines.
Wow. And you know what? They say content is king. Now DC is having its own streaming service.
Yep.
And so there's got to be a universe, if you will, of content, specifically like with the animated shows, and now they've just released the trailer for Teen Titans, a live action, which is totally different from the Teen Titans movie that is currently in theaters at the time that we're recording this particular interview. Tell me about your thoughts on Teen Titans and the difference between the two, and do you have any thoughts on the trailers that you've seen?
The Titans trailer for the DC Universe streaming service looks really cool. It's not super close to the actual comic books. It's not really all that comic book accurate, per se, but it's a lot more comic book accurate than Teen Titans Go, which is currently out in theaters.
Okay.
Teen Titans Go on Cartoon Network is kind of a satire on the whole genre. Whereas Titans, that's going to show up on DC Universe streaming, is a darker look at Dick Grayson as Robin and the team he puts together with Raven, Starfire, and Cyborg's not there, and Beast Boy. I'm excited. I can't wait. I think it's going to be really cool. And if there are parents listening, I would not let your children watch Titans if they watch Teen Titans Go, because based on the trailer, it's violent.
Violent and dark.
Yeah.
But do you like that idea of having different content for different age groups?
I love it.
I'll tell you this. My daughter saw the trailer for the new Shazam movie.
Fantastic.
And loved it. When, especially this, at the very end of this particular trailer, I'm not ruining anything, it's just the end of a trailer.
Yeah.
When he says something along the lines of, hey, I'm a superhero, what's up? She cracked up and she said, yes! And I said, oh, do you want to see that movie? She's like, yes! So, and, you know, I can see somebody who might love, like, the darker type movies to look at this Shazam and say, oh, what are they doing? But what they're doing is specifically for the target audience, like my daughter and like me, who enjoyed that idea of a very fun. It looks like a very fun movie.
It's great. It's a very fun comic book. I mean, you have a 10-year-old boy who yells Shazam and turns into this huge hulking superhero.
Mm-hmm.
On the inside, he's still Billy Batson, the 10-year-old orphan boy. So he's going to have fun with it, you know? And the books, and I hope they do this in the movie. I'm very excited for Shazam, by the way. And yes, I think it's great that they have different content for different age groups. I know I've seen a lot of people online complaining about Teen Titans Go, the TV show. How can they? It's blasphemy to make this new movie. Bro, it's not for you. It's for my 10-year-old daughter who looked at me last weekend and said, Daddy, I want to go see Teen Titans Go next weekend. I'm not going to say no to you.
Absolutely.
It's going to get you into it.
Absolutely.
That's fine. It started with me. I mean, Superman 2 was, Christopher Reeves was smiling and saving kitty cats from trees. If it's what gets these kids into the comic books and into these into the DC format, I'm all for it. Shazam looks awesome. And the comic books, he flies up almost out of the atmosphere, yells Shazam, turns back to Billy Batson and sees how far he can fall before he yells Shazam again and flies away. He plays with his powers, and he's going to do that in the movies. I love the part in the trailer where he finds out he's bulletproof.
Yes.
And he looks at the guy, he goes, oh, I'm bulletproof. You're dead. And he throws the guy through the window. And then he comes out and goes, superhero, what's up? And he's got the big old case of soda and the chips. Mm-hmm. You know, you're welcome for not getting robbed. It's great because it's going to bring the kids in. It's going to bring the younger audience in. You know, I've watched Batman versus Superman in front of my children. It's probably my favorite movie. In front of the kids before, and they get kind of bored. They get kind of, the 10-year-old gets kind of bored because it's very serious, and there's not a lot of Batman and Superman in it. And you know, Shazam's going to be great for the kids and for us fans, because we're going to get a whole another side of the superhero.
You know what? We have a break. We're just going to take a very quick break. Then we're going to come back. Let's talk about kind of the, you know, some of the, not necessarily the controversies, but how people have different opinions, especially online. Mm. I mean, your work is online. Do you have any interactions with those who have differing opinions and how they express that? Let's talk about that a little bit. We come back with Jeff Testanero here on Nutmeg Chatter. Welcome back to Nutmeg Chatter. I'm J. Timothy Quirk. Here in studio is Jeff Testanero. In this last segment, I want to talk about your writing and specifically how it is when you are online. You deal with many controversial subjects because people feel passionate. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that I think is very evident here is how passionate you are about your subject matter. And there are a lot of other people who have different, they have passions, and they might have different passions in different areas. How does that how does the conflict surface online for you?
It's I don't read the comments. I'm not ashamed to say it. I don't read it, because if somebody says, for example, I wrote an article for DC Comics News, Jeff Johns, who's writing the Green Lantern Corps movie that's due out in 3 years. There's no real substance to the article I wrote, because he didn't give any info at Comic-Con. He just said it's going to be different than what the fans are used to, and that was really it. So I had a report on that, and I posted it on a Green Lantern group. And the first comment I was, this is the worst article I've ever read. Where is the info about the movie? Where's the dates for the releases? Where's this? Where's the that? There's the only four paragraphs talking about how it's going to be different. This is the worst article ever. This is not reporting. Whoever wrote this should be fired. And I'm like, okay. And I just saw that because it was the first comment, so it came up in my newsfeed. So I'm like, all right. So I replied. I really don't like to do it. But I replied and said, well, if you read the article, the original, the source material, Jeff Johns didn't give any info. And that's, I left it at that. I got about 75 likes just on that reply comment alone.
Wow. Well, then that shows you that the people are
exactly,
you know, you can understand. But in no matter how much work you put in, there might always be that always. One person that's going to throw a wrench into things. I just want to, you know, speaking of controversial, and you know, we mentioned before the Michael Keaton and mm-hmm. Batman. When Michael Keaton was cast as Batman, that was a huge uproar and furor, and yet people look, and especially in hindsight, and they say, "Well, that's my Batman," and they and I think he did a fantastic job.
I think he did great.
Controversy now with Batman and whether Ben Affleck is going to actually continue in that particular role. I think Matt Reeves might recast. I want to go out on a limb and say I thought that Ben Affleck was an excellent Bruce Wayne, and I liked the costume of Batman. I thought that some of the writing could have served him better. We could have seen more of Ben Affleck as Batman if some of the writing or editing choices had been a little bit different.
I agree. I don't think we got enough content on Batman. I feel like Batman was just kind of there. I don't think Ben Affleck's going anywhere. I think it's going to be kind of more of an origin story, the new Solo movie.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody was up in arms when Gal Gadot was cast as Wonder Woman. She's not big enough. She's not curvy enough. She's not, you know what?
She did an amazing job.
All of a sudden, that was like the best superhero movie in the world.
She's Wonder awesome. Woman. She is literally, she is. One, you know, when you picture Wonder Woman, and before it would be Linda Carter, I guess, or you might picture the George Perez Wonder mm-hmm. Woman artwork. But, I mean, now, I mean, she has defined that role as her own. Are you looking forward to Wonder Woman 2?
I can't wait.
My only concern is how they bring back Steve Trevor or how that's going to occur.
I have an idea. I think they're bringing the character Dr. Fate into it. I think Dr. Fate saved him because he was self-sacrifice, and Dr. Fate realizes how powerful and important Wonder Woman is and how important Steve Trevor is to Wonder Woman. So I think that's how he's going to show up.
Wow. That is a... not a spoiler. What's the word? A foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
I'm a psychic. Fantastic. That is an amazing idea.
I have ESPN.
We have so much more to talk about, and yet we're running out of time. What are your last thoughts in terms of the DC Comics universe and what you're writing? Anything on the horizon that you're going to be writing more about?
I have a blog post for thelastfanboy.com coming out about, I call it the future, and how, yes, the MCU, no offense to the MCU, is the present, but Disney does not have it in its sights in the long term, but Warner Brothers does for DC. So that's coming up next.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, Jeff, there's so much more that we can cover because there's so many different areas and facets, but that's also why, just on a personal note, I enjoy your writing. I enjoy what you put out there. I have liked the Last Fanboy Facebook page as well, and I enjoy that work. I'm going to invite you to come on back so we can talk some more about it.
Let's do it.
In the future, because there's such a wide variety.
It's everywhere.
And especially there's going to be other events down later on the horizon in dealing with comics later on in the year. So we're going to talk more about that.
Cool.
I invite you to come on back.
Anytime.
Jeff Testanero, he is the writer for TheLastFanboy.com. There is a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, he is a writer on DC Comics News. Jeff Testanero, thank you for being here on Nutmeg Chatter.
Tim, thank you so much.
Nutmeg Chatter is a production of WAPJ, Torrington Community Radio. Some of the music has been provided by the Jingle Punks, courtesy of YouTube Royalty Free Music, so we thank them for that. Please stay tuned to this station for more information, music, and entertainment. We hope you enjoyed the chat.